Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. My guest today is Rose Belknap, a wonderful artist on Vashon. But before I start with my interview with Rose, I want to tell you what motivated me. Because she has a wonderful story, and I look forward to hearing more about it. You know, there's so many things that bring us to the creative process or to making art. For some of us, like me, I became an artist later in life because I wanted to play, and I was curious, and I was looking for something that would give meaning to my life in my last decades. But some people know from the time they're toddlers that they're artists, and by the time they're five or six, they can probably say I'm an artist. And I suspect Rose was more like that. And then there are those who go on and they go to art school and they develop their skills and their profession and their craft. And again, Rose walked that path. And then there's another dimension that I've become particularly appreciative of, which is what art can do for us when we need to heal. Because I don't need to tell anybody right now that we're living in a pretty broken world. And sometimes, you know, just trying to think our way through it is not enough. But being able to make something, at least in my book, is a way that I can feel whole. It's a way I can feel my own agency. It's a way I can feel like I'm a creator even when the destroyers seem to be getting the upper hand. And so I'm going to talk to Rose about that too. I want to talk about all of her creative path. But she's been open and said I could share about the loss of her son in 2013. Because I have to say, and I don't want to choke up, but I easily do this, that that's probably about the worst thing I could think of. And as some of you may, if you follow the show, you may know that I wrote a kind of a prose poem that was featured in The Beachcomber for Vicki and Ted Claybaugh, who lost their two adult daughters fairly recently. And again, you know, what do you say when there's nothing to say? You just know that the heart has been blasted open, and you pray that they will, with time, find their way back into wholeness. And I know Ted and Vicki, and I know they're well en route, and I know that that whole will be with them for the rest of their lives. So, wow, what a start. Thank you, Rose, for joining me. And I also want to share with listeners that I love your art. Right now, it's showing at the Vashon Center for the Arts as part of the the Women in Art?
Yeah, the Women in Arts Month.
Uh-huh. Women in Arts Month, where we have great women artists from Vashon, where we have lots of them, and also from communities near Vashon. And Lynanne Polite put together a terrific show. And for anybody who wants to see Rose's art, I suggest that they saunter over to Swiftwater Gallery, where not only does she have art, but she's played an active role in forming that community. And when I spoke, I did an interview with Mary Lou Svensson not too long ago, she said, you got to interview Rose. So that was the start of the journey that's led to the interview today. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Now, was it true that as a kid you knew you wanted to be an artist?
Yes. I mean, I did start drawing probably at 5 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I would draw anything and everything and enjoyed art for years and years through the school district and one of my neighbors was a self-taught artist, and she was like a grandma to me, so I loved her very much.
How did you survive what I call the big bump, which is, I think all kids have some flair for art, but there comes a time, often in elementary school, when the specter of judgment comes up, and it's often the teacher who can either tell you that your art is not up to par, and then for most of us, that's when we stop, or they can tell you that your art is really good, and then some people start playing to the teacher, and some of the native love of art starts to be filtered into sort of performing for adults. But you made it through. How did you do that?
Well, I just kept working, really. That's the key for me. It's just, I just keep working. And in college, my first time through college, I tried something else because my dad was like, you can't make money doing art. And then, so I did other jobs for years, but then I went and finished my degree at Cornish College of the Arts and loved it. Loved it there. Everything was centered around art.
So let me get this right. You started out, you first went on a different path into college because your dad told you basically it wasn't practical to try and be an artist.
Exactly.
But life intervened, and you went back and got a fine arts degree at a very fine institution here in the Seattle area. So as you went through Cornish, did you have a particular direction?
Well, I always really liked painting, but I did printmaking. I like printmaking. In fact, now when I go to art fairs, like over in Tacoma, they have a kind of like a studio tour that we do here. And I go to the printmakers because I just find it so interesting. And I still love painting, you know, after all these years.
So can I guess it's been 50 plus years of painting?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yes.
That is so incredible because on the show, you know, I think it's interesting to find out what starts people, but I'm also super curious about how you sustain your love for something over the decades, how it doesn't go dry, how it doesn't go boring, how you don't feel like you're making the same old thing. What's that been like? I mean, 50 years or 50 years plus is a long time. How have you kept your passion for painting?
I don't think I know. I just love doing it. You know, it's kind of like the best thing for me. You know, I think about it all the time. I think about colors all the time. Every day I'm combining colors in my head, and then I go out and I try it. And I find it endlessly fascinating.
It sounds to me that art isn't just something or painting you do, but it's kind of a lens through which you live.
I do, yes.
Yeah.
And the island is perfect, you know, for me.
Yeah, I think the island is perfect, but I also love what you just said, because I think people don't, sometimes I don't think people understand that there are hidden gifts in art that aren't just about being a great producer. Because this whole thing that you referred to about walking down the street and trying to imagine what the mix of colors is on the Doug fir, or what the light is doing at a particular moment in time, it almost makes the world fascinating.
It does. It always does. I mean, and there's certain blues in the evening that I'm always thinking about when I look out of my windows and think, okay, how can I make that blue? What combination of blues or purples can I add together to equal this blue?
Oh, wow. Are you in acrylics or oils?
Oils.
Oils. The blues in your paintings that you have at Vachon Center for the Arts right now are beautiful.
Thank you.
You're beautiful because they're, how do we describe them? They're waterscape landscapes. You're working with water and darkness
and clouds. Yeah.
And clouds.
Yeah.
They're really gorgeous. And I think when one just passes by and looks at art, you don't always realize how many decisions have gone into just what the color blue you're going to use and what you're going to put it next to,
yes,
so that it really stands out. Yeah, there's so many things that I never appreciated before, but looking at your art, I can. And when you graduated from Cornish, did you think you were going to be earning your living as an artist?
No. No.
No.
I really, I don't think many people really earn their living at art.
It's kind of like the sad secret, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or it's kind of, to me, it also feels a little bit like, you know, as somebody who wants to be an NBA player, mm-hmm, you know, a basketball player, or, you know, a football player, a professional football player, or a professional soccer player. It happens, but it's rare.
It is rare. And I mean, there are tons of reasons to make art, and there are ways that you can put together a living as an artist. But a thing that I came to appreciate was knowing how long it takes to produce a piece if you're not doing mass production and stuff.
Yeah.
And so as a consumer, I go in and say, whoa, that's a little bit beyond my budget. I'm not used to putting several hundreds of dollars or $400, $500, $600, $700, $800 in the piece. And then when I'm crafting, I go, do they have a bloody clue how many hours not only goes into the art, but then also the pre and post and the finishing, the framing, the promoting. I mean, if you, I hate to say it, but I think sometimes it's pennies on the dollar, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, I truly believe that. Like I say to my husband all the time, I say, I'm not sure. Maybe I'm up to 50 cents an hour.
Oh, no. That's reality.
Yeah.
And your art is good too. And your art sells. So that's honest. Did you need to work outside the house when you were?
Yes, I taught a lot of art.
Oh, okay.
At Harbor School, Chautauqua, and the VCA, especially when they were in the old building.
Yes.
I probably worked there teaching art for 15 years.
Wow.
For kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking from like maybe 6 to 10 or 12 year olds. And then in the school district, I worked, I don't know, many, many, many years, probably another 15 on children who were in third or fourth grade, usually. And sometimes I did earlier, and then sometimes I also would work with the teenagers at Student Link, you know, so our family link. And that was fun, you know, because they were older and they had more capability, you know, they're just, their brain and their eyes and everything were further advanced. But I enjoyed working with kids very much.
Did teaching influence your own creation and your relationship to your art?
I'm sure it did. I enjoyed the kids. Some of them really had no idea that they could be creative. And then they were, and they were astounded and they were just thrilled to produce something, mm-hmm, you know, that they liked.
I'm jealous of kids who get to study art and be on the island. So what was I going to say? Over the years, do you notice a difference in kids and how they approach art, or has it stayed kind of the same with?
Well, the projects always kind of changed, but they, you know, every year I'd kind of think of something new to do. And the kids loved it. You know, they were up to the challenge. You know, they were always up to it. And I tried to make it fun for them. But I think there is a time when kids kind of draw back and are afraid kind of to show their work because they get self-conscious. And I think that hits a little bit later than fourth grade. Mm-hmm. You know, in the middle school, I think children get very self-conscious about what they're doing.
I suspect there are a couple of different echelons, because people, like in my generation, I think there was the strict art teacher experience in grade school when someone said, you're not an artist, basically, or these are the artists and these are not the artists. What you're talking about, it sounds like another stage where somebody may love making art, but it's like the stage we go through as pre-teenagers or teenagers. We're self-conscious about our bodies and yes. who we are, and we don't want to display or open ourselves up to any kind of ridicule or judgment. I've never thought about that, but I could totally imagine how that would be another stage.
Yeah. And I always tried to, you know, in the classes I taught, when somebody would get done, we would clap for them. You know, we would clap. We would, you know, all cheer for their piece when they were done, whether it was with printmaking or painting. And we did a lot of different things, but we clapped. We would have a show, and you know, it was great.
I love that. I've never heard of that. And I bet you clapped for everybody, right?
Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody did a great job.
That is so great, because that way everybody can feel, oh, you know, my piece may not look like hers, but I did my piece.
Yeah.
And the hidden secret that I didn't understand about art, and at least about drawing, is that if you do it a lot and you love doing it, you generally get better.
Yes.
But if somebody tells you too early on, that gives you something harsh that makes you stop doing it, you probably will not get better.
Yeah.
And so this idea of applauding the children, it's magic, because you're just basically saying, keep going.
Yes. Because they were thrilled, you know, and they were happy and proud, and they should be. You know, they should be.
They should be. But too often we're in a competitive performance culture where,
yes.
you know, the parents want to see the kids exhibited too soon. You know, when it's really not part of their developmental process and stuff. So let's go on and talk about the hard part. You know, 2013, you lose your son. How old was he?
He was 17.
17. Could you breathe?
No. Then I was totally destroyed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was really hard. He had been up at the high school. He took his saxophone because he was playing in the band for the girls' basketball team. And then he went over to his friend's house, whose dad was home, and mom was going to be home. She was there at the game with them. And they were... three other children and my son, or young men and my son, were at their house studying for a chemistry exam. He had an A in chemistry, and he was trying to help his friends. And I said to him, I said, well, before he left, I said, you know, you have an A in chemistry. You don't have to go study for this test. And he goes, yeah, but I want to help my friends.
Wow.
Because they're not doing so well.
Oh.
And then I was waiting up for him. And I got a phone call from the mom of the boys. One of the boys, the boy at the house where the boys were studying, I got the phone call from her, and she said, he's been in an accident. So I just grabbed my purse and my keys, and I yelled to my husband, who was sleeping, we have to go. And we found the accident site on our way, in between her house and my house.
Shoot.
And he had actually died at the scene before we got there. They were still getting him out of the car when we got there, taking him out through the window. And they worked on him, but it was not gonna, he was not gonna be revived.
So all I can say, first of all, my heart's with you.
Thank
what can you.
You
say?
Thank you.
And that is like the worst on so many levels, because it's a loss, it's gut-wrenching, it's traumatic. You know, to your system would have been blown out of the air. You know, just going to an accident and seeing somebody you didn't even know is traumatizing. So then let's roll forward a little, because I can't imagine how you did the next few weeks. But at some point, you decided you needed to make art. How did that come to you, and where did you make that, cross that divide?
I started to work again, and at that time I had my studio was in the basement, and so it's a daylight basement, and I started to work again, and it just got me out of my head. It was kind of like a meditation.
Yes.
And I've always thought of art as kind of a meditation, because like you say, there's so many things that go into it. And so you're thinking, you know, it kind of cuts down on all the other thoughts that come in. It replaces all those other thoughts that just crowd into your brain. And you just focus on art, and it really's gotten me through. It's helped me heal. Mm-hmm. And then in the second year after my son died, we bought a piece of property that's right next to our, was right in front of our property. And so my husband built me a studio on it. And that was great. And so that's now where my studio is. And I love it. I go down there pretty much every day. It's very unusual when I'm not in the studio working.
What an amazing, good guy.
Yeah, yeah.
What an amazing gift, because I think that's one of the secret keys to making art is having a place.
Yes.
And being able to not only have a place, because we all need a place to make messes and to be a creator, but there's a sanctuary sense of being able to go to a place that's your place to make art, which is kind of like your holy moment. You know?
Yes, it is. It's my sanctuary, exactly.
Yeah. And I love what you said there, because you know, I spoke earlier about living in this broken world.
Yeah.
I found recently that I have a hard time meditating, because, you know, I'll start getting angry about things I think about, or news, or stuff like that. And even though meditation's still a really great practice, for me, sometimes I'll go in and I'll pick up a pencil and I'll just think about how to render in anything. And it like gives me this beautiful, calm focus.
Yes.
And the other stuff can drop away. So artist meditation, I think, is kind of under-acknowledged.
Yes, I think you're correct. It helps everything. You know, it's my meditation and my quiet place, and I don't think about this really strange time we're in.
Yeah, and we need strange time-free zones, you know? And,
yes.
And also, you know, I think there's more and more research about how creating can help our nervous system, mm-hmm. and just take us down a notch, help us calm, help us come back into ourselves.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. I'm so glad. And then you just kept moving forward.
Yes.
Every year was another year.
Another year. I know. I just keep working and trying to figure out what I'm going to do next. And I usually have several ideas.
How do you keep it fresh?
I just think of, to me, fresh is another idea. Like, oh boy, you know, oh, I got to try this, and this will push me.
Can you give me an example of an idea you've had recently that was the next wave?
And yeah, well, I take a lot of photos for research, but also for ideas. And I took a whole bunch of photos last year. I was trying to think, it was in the fall, it doesn't really matter, but, and it was up at the Four Corners up in town, you know, the Bank Road and the main highway. And I was on Bank looking towards the hardware store. And I took this photo and I thought, oh, that's really interesting, but wow, there's a lot of people in it. I'm not sure I could do that. But then I was over at the Seattle Art Museum and saw this incredible small painting, very, very small, by Bodin, B-O-D-I-N. And I was just taken with this small painting, like, oh my gosh, I think it's my favorite in the whole show. And because of that painting, there was a lot of people. It was a beach scene, but there was people on the beach, and it was rendered very loosely. And I thought, huh, maybe I could work somewhat similar. I'm not super loose like that, but I could work at trying to make it super, you know, looser. And so I think I'm going to try that, because it will just push me a little bit, you know, and that's a good thing. Pushing's a good thing.
And you're also speaking to the power of going out and seeing art in museums. And I saw in your bio that you belong to a museum group. Can you tell me about that?
Yes. It's four of us, and sometimes five of us get together, and we do trips to go see art. And we've been to Los Angeles twice and to look at art. And all we do is look at art and eat well.
That sounds like paradise.
It's great. And we go to as many museums as we can cram in and however long we're going to be there. And we went to the Southwest, to New Mexico, and we've gone to Vancouver, BC, and of course, SAMS, Seattle Art Museum, and Portland Art Museum. And we had been wanting to go to New York City, but that was right that year that we were going to go was when COVID hit. So that threw everything out, you know.
I think that's brilliant, and I'm jealous because as I've come into art, I realize there's such a difference. I mean, as great as it is to have the internet and be able to see masters and other paintings online, being able to get nose to nose with a great painting is a whole different experience.
Oh yeah. It's unbelievable, and I truly treasure those times. And we're gonna go. On the 2nd of April, we're going into SAM to see the new show that they have.
Which is brilliant. The Beyond Mysticism Northwest Art.
Yes.
Yeah. I visited that show, and it was one that really brought the experience to me, because at the end of the show, they have some abstract expressionists. They actually have a Franz Klein, who doesn't really belong in the Northwest, but he influenced. And there's, and I'm having that senior moment thing where I can't remember the name, Japanese collage artist, Paul
Hiroshi, I think, or no,
Harakama or something like that. It's, it's really bad. I stood next to those paintings and they're big, and I was mesmerized. The nuance. And in the paper, and he's blending his Japanese culture with the Northwest influence. And there's like a gold screening the way you would have around a Chinese scroll or Japanese scroll, and this amazing collage in the middle. And I just stood there for 10 minutes. I was just blown away. And I've seen that picture in a book about him, and it's not the same. Mm-hmm. It's not the same. There's something about nose to nose with great art.
Yes.
That's a great practice. I love that. I'm going to steal that idea.
Oh, it's fun. And some people go, well, how can you do that? And I'm like, well, actually, and this is kind of strange, but by cramming a lot of viewing in a short amount of time, you also begin to see what's missing in the museum. Like, oh, they don't have the mirror, or they don't have someone else. You can actually start seeing what they don't have. And that's interesting, you know?
Yeah, and that's a great question that people often don't ask. I mean, which of the great masters don't they have? But also, who's been excluded? Because, you know, I looked at a friend's art history book from the 50s. That was actually the text they were using at Stanford in the late 60s. You know, the only woman I saw in 2,000 years of art history was Mary Cassatt.
Yeah.
The only woman. Yeah. You went like, was it really like that, that whoever was writing the book was that dumb?
Yeah.
And you go, oh, yeah. And it's pretty recent that we began to say, who's not at the party?
Yeah. And there, and okay, this may seem really mean or something, but women are still far down the list on, you know, getting their work shown, you know, or showing in museums. There's still, you know, the percentage of women that are actually out there showing is way below the men.
Yeah, way below the men. And then at the same time, one of my pet passions is women who are finally recognized in their 80s.
Yes.
Because you feel like, holy, you know, I shouldn't say a word online, but, you know, they've been here. They've been creating for a long time. It took till they were 80 to have, or Ruth Asawa, who is a Japanese-American, beautiful sculptress, creative spirit, educator, amazing person. You know, it was in the last years of her life that she began to get the retrospectives.
Yes.
That she more than deserved, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and there's like countless women like that, you
countless
know,
women.
Who work diligently through their whole life and sometimes support a spouse or a partner who is also in the art world, and that person, being a man, will get more publicity and more shows than his wife.
Totally. And yeah. That's where, have you ever read the book Ninth Street Women?
Yes, I love that
like,
book.
Man, if you have the willpower to go through 700 pages, it is seminal. It is, because it describes the women, and a couple of them were famous wives.
Right.
Who were instrumental to the New York art scene in the 40s mm-hmm. and all. However, some of the big names went to their husbands. We know Jackson Pollock. We don't know Lee Krasner at the same level, except right. That's changing.
And it is changing for her now, but I mean, she didn't
even get...
How many
years after she died?
Yes, you know? And she only had one solo show, I think, before she died, and that was after he died.
Right.
You know, so it's really still prominent that women don't get shown.
Yeah, yeah. But you're having a role in changing that.
Yeah. Well, I hope.
Yeah. And tell me about Swiftwater Gallery. Were you part of the founding squad for Swiftwater?
No, I was not part of the founding squad, but I came in after a year.
Ah.
And I was there. I was one of the founding artists in it, but I wasn't there's the founding people who actually created Swiftwater. I was not one of those people, but I was one of the first artists to be in the gallery. And now I'm on the board, and I also do I do videos of all Mark Pease and I do short 2-minute videos of the artists in our gallery. Anybody who wants to have their video done, we do them, and then they're shown on the Mark and I bought a TV monitor and have them showing in the hallway whenever we're open. They're run on a loop, so they just keep playing.
It's a great series. I stumbled onto it. I don't know, maybe it was through the Swiftwater newsletter, but I thought that is brilliant, because you went to people's studios.
Yes.
And so we get to meet the artist. We see a little of their art, usually, you know, only a snippet, but we see them in their studio. And I'm addicted to seeing people's studios. So.
Yes.
Oh, that was, I didn't know you were the part of the force behind it, but it's a brilliant initiative.
Oh, yeah. Mark and I, we got on it, and we do longer ones, too, that are actually shown on Voice of Ash on TV.
Oh, great.
And we have four on there now that are between 3 minutes and, I think the longest one is almost 13 minutes.
How do people see that?
They can go to YouTube and go to swiftwatergallery.com, mm-hmm. Or they can go to the Swiftwater website, which is swiftwatergallery.com, and they click on. It's usually there's two menu options. There's the shorts, they call shorts. That's the 2 minute ones. And then there's the videos, and that's the longer. So they can see the longer ones on our, you know, on our website or YouTube. And they're also here. I think they're on Arts on the Air here.
Cool.
For the TV, you know.
Sweet. And our TV at Voice of Vashon is going to be expanding soon, so you'll probably be hearing more about it. But I didn't know that. And that is just great. And I think it's such a service because, first of all, I think Swiftwater is wonderful.
Thank you.
We have such an artistic and creative community. It's really great to be able to go in and see the art of your friends, your neighbors, your community displayed. And it's good. You know, it's really good art. But it just contributes something to the community that I think is really important, you know?
Oh, yes. I do, too. I love being there. It's a great spot just to come in and browse.
Yeah.
I mean, every time I go in there, I think, oh, man, I want to buy this. And I do. I buy a lot of work, but I love it. And,
oh, that's so great.
You know, we have so many artists here. You know, we're so lucky on Vashon to have so many artists, and that includes music and writers and poets and visual art. I mean, we're a truly a lucky community.
We're totally lucky, and my impression, and you'll tell me if you think this is right, because I've interviewed about 60, not all visual artists, you know, musicians and creators and entrepreneurs as well and all, but I think the community is amazingly supportive. I mean, there's not, maybe I'm wrong and you could correct me, but I don't think artists are out to outcompete and knock each other down. It feels like it's kind of, come on, let me help you. Or do you want to be a part of her? You know, am I right?
Yes, yes. Well, that's kind of the whole point behind the videos was that I just wanted to get more eyes on our artists, you know, because I think there's so many great artists out here, and we just need to get more eyes on this community. So
it's true, and the other reality is that I don't think the world has been easy for galleryists in the past. You know, when we were knocked out in 2008, when Washington Mutual failed, and people didn't have the money to come and buy art. I think what's the gallery that was over in Burton?
Silverwood.
Yeah, didn't they close? And people just weren't buying art in the same way, which made it hard for something that's so important to the community.
Yes, I agree. I totally agree. And I love Silverwood Gallery. And I think it's just really important. Art is important, and you need to live with things you love. You know, and if you love a painting or if you love a sculpture, if you can afford it, buy it, because you will appreciate it every day. You know, every day you'll love it.
What's the difference for you from having, you know, like when I grew up, we had lots of posters and prints. But I think there's something different about having original art. Does it play that way for you?
I think so. Yes, yes. And I love whatever kind of art, like printmaking, I've bought several Brian Fisher's and Deborah Taylor's, and also Annette Massett's work. I love art, and I just look at it like we need it. You know, it's an important component in our lives. I think it uplifts you, you know, just viewing it, you know.
Yeah.
And back to the museum group, I find going to see art is so, it helps feed me, mm-hmm. you know. It's like food for my soul. And so to me, seeing this gallery that has a lot of great art in it, it just makes me feel happy. So I'm very grateful to be in that gallery and to be with so many wonderful island artists.
I love that. And I think for me, I share the experience that seeing art and making art is soul food. You know,
it is.
And in a world that's moving fast and faster, we're able to do more, accomplish more, buy more, but not necessarily feed the soul more.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Yeah. Anything else you want to... you're really answering the question I was going to ask you last, which is really, why do we need art? You know, why do we need to make it? Why do we need to see it? And I think you've already answered that. Is there anything you'd want to add to that?
Well, I feel like Vashon is a unique and incredible community that I feel grateful to be a part of. They have sustained me when at my lowest, and given me a great deal of love.
Well, that's what we all need. I mean, there are times when being in a town, but a town that's as tuned in and culturally active as we are, is a huge gift. Because I know, going back to the tragedy the Claybaugh's felt, to me it was an immediate kick in the gut. And I knew that that was going to be true of hundreds of people who have known them over time. It wasn't just this thing happened that we read about in the news. It was like, they're our family. They're one of us. We're going to step up. What do they need? You know?
That's right.
And I sometimes think, what would I do if the worst happened? And I think for myself, I would call upon my community and trust that in some way they would be there. And then I would go to my studio.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I did.
Yeah, and the rest is history. And so thank you for sharing about that. Because
well,
I know,
you.
Again, the pain never goes away. But there's a way in which, I mean, just the fact that you're willing to share it is really healing for others.
Thank you. Thank you, Sally.
Yeah, to know that we get through, but all the better when we have friends, community, and art. You know?
That's right. That's the key.
Yeah. So again, I'm been wonderfully talking to Rose Belknap, and I invite you to go and see her. Oh, it'll just be a little bit longer, or is it down yet?
It comes down on Monday.
On Monday, so it might be a little. Might already have passed when the show airs. But she'll be at Swiftwater, and she'll be out because she's going strong. You know, the decades behind her, she isn't stopping anytime soon. And
no.
Thank you so much for sharing these minutes with me.
Well, thank you, Sally. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.